Are you currently dealing with a stubborn injury that keeps re-aggravating itself? Well, on this episode, we're going to talk about it. And welcome to the Concast, a podcast where we discuss all things health, wellness, and injuries in an attempt to better understand the human body. This is episode 151. Last week, I was having a bad day, and it was just one of those days where nothing's quite going as planned. You're feeling a little bit annoyed, a little bit anxious, a little bit aggravated by a number of different things in life. In an attempt to better my mood, I decided that I was going to go downstairs and have a really good workout. And working out a lot of the time changes things for me. It, you know, get those feel-good endorphins rolling, and a lot of the time it will shift the course of your day in a better direction, for me anyway. So I go downstairs with the best intentions in the world. I'm feeling a little bit uptight. I bend down to pick up a kettlebell, and I feel my back immediately tighten up. And over a period of a few minutes, it got progressively more intense. And so my intent of having this really, really great workout essentially didn't happen. And at the time of injuring my back, like at the time that I did it, I was almost not surprised at all by the course of the day that I was having. And it wasn't not necessarily one of those instances where, well, I'm having a bad day, this is just the cherry on top. I just kind of felt like throughout the day and the days leading up to that particular point in time, I was maybe being, you know, overcome by a bit of stress, wasn't taking care of myself as well as I had been, wasn't sleeping as well, you know, a number of different things. So it led me to think about injuries and re-injuries, and there have been a number of people over the years that continue to struggle with injuring the same thing, whether it be, you know, I keep re-injuring my back, or I keep struggling with back pain, or I keep re-spraining my knee, or I keep injuring my hamstring. I mean, the list goes on. I keep injuring my shoulder, for example. And it got me thinking about what are, you know, everyone wants to not have this thing recur and happen over and over because it is really, really frustrating when it happens. And it seems like each time it happens, it pushes you down a little bit more and more. And depending upon what it's preventing you from doing or how it's preventing you from progressing in whether it be life, work, sport, what have you, it can just compound the frustrations. And it is a priority for everybody. I mean, injury recovery is typically pretty non-linear. I mean, and I think that's maybe one of the things we don't necessarily do a great job of in education, particularly in textbooks. You know, we say ankle injury, low grade, whatever that be, 4 to 6 weeks, 2 to 6 weeks, depending upon age. And there are times where, you know, people have many times where people have setbacks. It's much more of this undulating high, low, roller coaster-esque ride to recovery. And it is frustrating, and it can be painful, and it can be not very fun, and it can affect not only the injured tissue, but a lot of other things in our lives, from work to sports to things we do for fun to going out with friends. The list goes on. And so re-injury is a really, really frustrating thing to go through. So I thought for today's episode, I would try to look at re-injury and some of the things that I think may be related to helping us move in a direction that might be a little bit more positive. Now, the first thing that I will say is, while there are things that come up in the research, there's not one particular thing that is going to prevent you from becoming re-injured. This is a list of things that allow you to put you in the best opportunity to move forward in a way that is positive while addressing concerns of re-injury up front, in an attempt to make either an initial injury follow that linear process as best as possible, or if this is something you're listening and you've struggled with something, trying to zoom out, understanding where maybe there are things that I'm doing that may not be as favorable for me. I won't necessarily use the word wrong, but maybe there are things that are worth changing and seeing whether that yields a different result. The first kind of point of discussion when it comes to re-injury that people are often concerned with and will ask questions about is, if I've had X injury, if I've pulled my hamstring, am I at risk of re-injuring my hamstring further down the line? That is a really hard thing to truly predict across the entire population. But it does appear like in certain circumstances, if you've had an injury, and particularly if it's like an acute injury, you know, one of the most common things when we talk about acute injuries and then the prospect of re-injury or a new injury in that area of the body or injuring something similar is ACL surgery and ACL recovery. It appears that, for example, in an ACL injury, one of the things that can lead to or be a source of re-injury is coming back too soon from surgery. And this can lead to a re-injury of the same ACL, so maybe a re-tear. It can lead to increased risk of lower extremity injuries in general, so maybe a hamstring or quadricep strain. Or it can lead to tearing, an increased risk of tearing the other ACL. So there are certain injuries, and there certainly wouldn't be enough time to go through every single injury, but there are certainly in circumstances where people are injured where having that injury and maybe coming back a little bit accelerated, or what people use as early, which we'll talk about that a little bit later, in the research can stand a chance of re-injuring that structure. Now, the great thing about some of these very specific injuries, particularly with sport, again, speaking to the ACL, is there is a ton of research out there that can give us a general guideline for saying, look, if you're returning from an ACL ahead of 9 months, there is increased, substantial increase of re-injury, injuring the other ACL or a lower extremity injury. So if we know that that research exists out there and we're mindful of it, using those timelines that are available to us would seemingly be the most appropriate means of managing and oversight there. Now, for every re-injury or kind of chronic state that someone gets in following an injury, I think we have to remember that the vast majority of injuries do very well, and people do recover inside of the majority of these timelines that are cited. So while we're talking about the frustration of injuries healing, the vast majority of people still do very well, regardless of the musculoskeletal injury that they have or the surgery that they may go through. I think in speaking to the sort of acute injury and just following up on the ACL injuries, one of the really important things to understand is biological tissue's time to heal roughly. One of the reasons why that, you know, 9-month period seems to be so important in the example of the ACL is, well, you've got, you know, a surgery that you've gone through. You've got often a graft ACL or a newly formed ACL put into your knee. So that graft may be from a cadaver, or it may be a ACL that's been formed by your hamstring tendon or your patellar tendon. And that is screwed into the knee, into the tibia, and into the femur. What has to occur is the biology of that tissue has to stiffen, strengthen, harden. And what we understand is the rehabilitation process doesn't necessarily accelerate that to lengths far beyond that biological window for tissue time to heal. Meaning, if I have my ACL repaired and I am really, really diligent with my rehab for 3 months, it doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to increase the efficiency of the ACL's ability to blend into that bone. Tissue takes time to heal. Tissue takes time to strengthen. Tissue takes time to stiffen in the body. Whether that's, I mean, post-surgery is an example that we give often. But even in the case of, say, a muscle strain where the tissue's been disrupted or torn a little bit, there's nothing that we can really do to help speed up that time frame. For the individuals that I hear, you know, returning early, or this person, this isolated person has returned early from an ACL surgery or a hamstring strain, it's always a little bit concerning when you hear that, because the follow-up to that often several weeks later is player's been pulled, player has injured, re-injured X, or now has a new injury. The discussion around time frame and the respecting of biological tissue's time to heal should be understood. Tissue healing will also influence other things in a person's life, from activities of daily living to the sport that they're doing to, let's say, participating in work. And sometimes the urgency of an event will often dictate the time for that person to return. And in circumstances like this, there's often an understanding that needs to be made around the potential risks associated with that. So for example, if I hurt my arm and it's not broken, but it's really, really painful, and I can only afford, from a financial perspective, to take 2 weeks off of work, I'm returning to work in 2 weeks, regardless of how, you know, the state of my arm, because I financially cannot afford to take any more time off. A lot of the time we talk about it in reference to sport, but I think in work and life, it's equally or more as important, where in sport, they talk about, you know, the urgency or the importance of the game, whether the athlete can perform at a high level still. Whereas in work, it has direct life consequences as well. So in those cases, you have to understand the potential risks involved. What is the likelihood of re-injury? There's a discussion between the overseeing therapist, physicians, the person that's injured, and looking at, you know, has enough time elapsed for biological integrity of the tissue to be close to fully healed. We also understand things like age will affect the ability of tissue to heal. So as generally we get older, it can take a little bit longer. We also know that general health profile going into injury can also influence the ability to heal, whether there's comorbidities, for example, if someone has cardiovascular disease or diabetes or other metabolic syndrome, sometimes that can affect tissue time to heal. And there's nothing set in stone. It's not like you can say it's going to take 2 weeks longer in every individual that's got a metabolic syndrome. But generally speaking, there is an understanding there that it might not go necessarily according to plan. Having that understanding well in advance can, again, set expectations for how this might go. It can also set expectations for being mindful of symptoms and allowing symptoms to some degree to help dictate your recovery process. A lot of the time there are, again, a change in symptoms for the better, and then they will change for the worse, or they will return to ground zero, and this kind of undulation will continue to occur. While the process of recovery is not linear, you hope that you are trending in a positive manner over a longer period of time. So trying to get a sense of how much symptoms increase can be valuable in certain circumstances. So, you know, yesterday was a really bad day, but overall, throughout the course of the week, I really haven't had any symptoms up until yesterday. When you have symptoms, whatever those may be, does it return to baseline relatively quickly? Baseline doesn't necessarily mean pain-free. Baseline means where is your current baseline? So for example, my hamstring was bothering me. It was at like a 1 out of 10. I went for a run. It spiked to maybe a 4 out of 10 in the middle of the run and then felt okay. And then at the end of the run and in the days following the run, it was back down to a 1. Okay, that seems like it's pretty positive. Versus I went for a run, I was at a 1, I quickly spiked to a 7, it stayed there, it never got better, and the last 3 or 4 days, it's been really, really painful. Just using something as simple as what's called a visual analog scale or a subjective score of the symptoms and what the person is telling you, you know, in those two examples, you can quite clearly see that one seems to be a little bit more positive than the other. Also, I think it's worth having a conversation around is, does activity improve your symptoms or does it make it worse? Particularly if this was the activity or the sport or the job that you were doing at the time that you got injured. So are you returning to those similar activities and is it still going well? Or I was great up until I started running again and now I've had a really big setback. At that point in time, it's an opportunity to have a conversation around progression of intensity in recovery. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're going back to square one, we're eliminating X activity. All it means is that we want to start to consider things that we can manipulate in progression and how intense something is, and allow that to become a bit of a more positive experience. So some very simple factors that we can try to manipulate are things like strength. Did you lift something too heavy too soon in the recovery process? Did you jump from 10 pounds to 70 pounds? Is that obvious to us? Was there kind of an error on maybe my part in terms of my suggestion as the therapist? Or was there miscommunication between the therapist and the person that's injured? Volume, or again, we're doing too much too soon. A lot of the time, strength and volume are inversely proportional to each other, meaning generally in certain circumstances of recovery, the more weight we're lifting, the less overall volume or sets and repetitions that we may be doing. We can also look at volume dictated across, say, the course of a day or a week or hours or repetitions. There are many ways you can look at volume. So for example, are you doing, you know, 1 5-kilometer run per week now in your recovery process for an ankle injury? Or are you, let's say you did 1 run last week and now all of a sudden this week you did 4 or 5 and the ankle's blown up and swollen. Did we increase overall volume too much? Did we increase intensity too quickly? Did we add in a type of exercise? For example, in a calf injury, did we add in hopping, jumping, or bounding too quickly? Did we increase the speed of an exercise to become more ballistic too quickly? For example, did we add in, you know, throwing too quickly? Did we change the environment too quickly? Did we put you in an unstable position too early in the process? Or is there some intermediate position between really, really unstable and really stable that we need to play with? We can even take that one step further and look at specific skills. And did we add in skills that were maybe a little bit too much too soon? Whether this is a sport-specific skill, again, did we add in throwing too quickly? Did we put you into practice too quickly, or put you into non-contact practice with the team too quickly? There is a difference between return to play generally and return to sport performance. And return to play meaning you might be fully integrated back with the team and training, but you haven't been really tested in the return to sport performance environment. So maybe we've only, you know, you're back training with the team in full, but in scrimmage settings, you've only played 10 minutes and then you've been pulled. That to me is a return to play environment versus a return to sport performance environment is maybe you go and, you know, you've played now a full half of a soccer game. You've been able to recover. You've had no issues with symptoms re-arising. And this allows you to now make some decisions about return to play. The other thing is, when you look at things like strength, volume, intensity, sport-specific skills, how does that relate to things like warm-up, rest, recovery, some of these other things that we can often take for granted? So in between exercise or in between work, am I getting enough rest time? Not only in between, you know, activities, but during activity. I'm working on an industrial line and I'm just lifting too many car hoods too quickly. And it start, you know, for the first 8 hours of my shift, it's good. But through not hour 9 and hour 10, my shoulder pain just really onsets quickly and goes downhill very, very fast. Recovery is a very multifactorial thing. So, you know, is there some lower limb residual swelling that you're getting? Could something like a compression sock help? If you run 3 kilometers, you don't get lower limb swelling, but if you run 5, you do. If you warm up, you get no pain, but if you don't warm up, you get pain. What does that look like? You know, a lot of these metrics that are related to intensity versus recovery ultimately are trying to manage overall fatigue as well. Not only fatigue of, say, biological tissue as it heals, but fatigue of the system. So, you know, recovery methods, which we'll talk about maybe a little bit later, but things like sleep and general overall stressors in life also affect the ability of ourselves to be resilient in the injury recovery process. Can we make additional modifications to either the environment that we're in, whether that be work? Again, can we get you on modified duties for a period of time to help? Or is this just a matter of something like skill level in sport where, you know, I used to play hockey at a really, really high level and I feel myself slowing down and I'm playing with people that are far better than me right now and I'm trying to keep up and I continually re-injure myself. And I would still like to play hockey, but maybe now I have to go to a league that is a little bit more at my skill level currently. I think when you talk about progression of intensity and recovery and how that relates, there are several factors that can be manipulated to try and make the progression a little bit more linear, stave off, you know, this current cycle of re-injury or discomfort. A lot of the time is just a discussion around, again, some of the specific metrics that I mentioned there. I think, too, this also opens up a conversation for something like, is there something that is lacking here? You know, and a lot of the time I'll just ask the person that's injured, and they seem to do a great job at telling me. You know, when I've gone through injuries, I know sometimes, for example, you know, we take something as simple as like balance. So I injured my ankle. My balance is still really poor. You know, my strength seems good. My range of motion seems good. Even my power seems pretty good. But I can't stand on one foot at all. I lose my balance very, very quickly. I feel like I'm not strong or stable in this position. Well, there are things that we can do to work on that. Now, can we necessarily say that your lack of balance is preventing you from getting over the hump, so to speak? No, but if there is something that's really, really an obvious outlier where all other metrics are improving, and there's this one thing that isn't, and the person is continuing to struggle with re-injury, I think it would be helpful to take a look at that and say, okay, can we layer this in? You know, what's the cost benefit of layering this in? Is the person willing to adopt this as part of the recovery plan? And then moving forward. And a further point to that might be something around, you know, the ignoring of something that is overtly obvious in the recovery process that you just hope is going to get better and it's not. Essentially saying that the same behavior is yielding a similar outcome each time you do it, and this is worth observing. So for example, I have shoulder pain, and every time I do a deltoid press at the gym, I go in, I'm in no pain, and after, I am 8 out of 10 for 3 days. This is very consistent. Nothing else bothers me. Do we need to be doing this exercise in the first place? Can we move to a incline press and get similar results with no pain? Can we adopt a completely different drill? How important is this exercise to you and you doing it or performing it? Are you just doing it because you think that you should be able to do it, or is it an exercise that you really enjoy, or you're doing it because you think it has carryover to something that you're doing in work or in sport or in life? Because there are many different modifications and exercises that can do similar things. So if there is something that seems X equals Y, what can I manipulate, or can I manipulate, or can I remove something to get you to perform the overall activity pain-free? And it's just a matter of, look, if this continues to happen and I continue to ignore it and it doesn't seem to be getting any better, chances are the behavior may need to be changed or looked at with a little bit more detail. And I think this is often where, when people ask about the importance of maybe talking to a therapist, having someone guide you that has experience in these things can be helpful, especially in the case of, say, something where you've had surgery. You often won't get this guidance over a long period of time from the surgeon that performed the surgery, because that's not necessarily their place. Their place is to make the surgical repair, check in on occasion, but that stepped guidance on what are, you know, some restrictions, should I not be doing this? They may give you a few, but in terms of all of the specifics of your activities of daily living, this is where a great therapist can come in and help along the way, giving you some tools, some education, try to reduce some of that anxiety that is often provoked, especially early in the post-surgical recovery process where things are awfully painful. Maybe you didn't think it was going to be this painful, or maybe you thought you'd, you know, be returning to work in a week and now it looks like it'll be more like a month. And helping guide you and looking at trying to maybe rein you in when you're getting ahead of yourself, literally, I guess, and saying, look, I really just want to be back to playing soccer. I really want to be back to work. I've really, you know, got this event coming up and I really need to be pain-free there. And just trying to parse that out into smaller step goals rather than getting really ahead of ourselves and looking at that one goal. Understanding the various elements of the injury, the stages that you may or may not go through, and that a lot of times several other improvements can happen before, say, pain reduction. And allowing maybe a therapist to point those out to you can be really valuable. So, you know, yeah, I know that your pain is still similar, but look at the range of motion of that knee replacement. It has 60% better than it was 3 weeks ago. And you're making really, really great progress, and you're walking, and your activity levels are getting better, and all of these things. A lot of the time it can be great to have that kind of support of a great therapist and a great coach to just help you move in that direction or something that's a little bit more seemingly positive. The other thing that therapists can do often is they can use objective metrics to help you along the way as well. For example, there are several in the research questionnaires that are specific to injuries. You can use those questionnaires coming right out of, say, surgery or an injury, a concussion, for example, and you can do these step check-ins to just allow for an opportunity for reflection to say, let's use concussion as an example. 2 days after your concussion, you were super symptomatic. You were 110 on the symptom scale. And now look, you're at 25 or 26. And it really does depend on, you know, for the therapists that are out there, it really depends on the specific nature of the injury. There are several general questionnaires to look at things like generalized anxiety and depression. Several of these I've mentioned on prior shows. And then you can get really specific on ACL questionnaires, upper limb disability scales, and that type of thing. For example, in an ACL, you can look at hamstring to quadricep strength ratios. Not only are there questionnaires that you can follow throughout the process, but there are metrics that you can use for return to play. So hop tests front to back and side to side for ACL, like I said, hamstring to quadricep strength ratio. Some of these injuries that have such a body of evidence behind them, we can use some of these metrics as part of the process in return to play. The metrics themselves are not perfect, but in certain circumstances, they can be worth looking at. So, you know, the person is pain-free, they've got their full range of motion, they want to return to sport, but you look at that quadricep to hamstring strength ratio and it's not where it needs to be, or hop tests aren't where they need to be. And let's say the person is at 7 months post ACL. There's something that's telling you that while that person is completely pain-free, that 7 month return to play might not be the best decision based on the totality of maybe some other evidence along with these metrics. And I think that that's also where kind of working with a therapist and the therapist using some objective metrics along with the relationship they've established and whether they've got a history with the person, whether this is an initial injury or whether there's a surgery involved. And again, looking at, you know, the importance of returning to whatever activity or life event that they're moving towards can be really, really helpful. All the while with the philosophy of, look, we can only control what we can control. I use this a lot when people are struggling with the ambiguity of recovery and concussion and concussion-like symptoms or headache. We can control all of the things or some of the things that we've talked about so far. What we can't necessarily control is outcome. And you will have heard me speak a lot about intent versus outcome recently. What we try and attempt to do is control things like, am I taking care of myself? Is my overall health doing well? Have I been able to maintain social relationships during this injury because they are important to me? Am I sleeping well? Am I eating well? Am I drinking too much alcohol? Am I smoking cigarettes and I'd like to quit? Have I been able to maintain my activity throughout this injury? Let's say I've broken my leg. Am I able to do an upper body workout and still receive all of the positive effects of endorphins from working out? Or could I be more active? Am I struggling with that mentally? I used to be really, really active, and now this injury or this surgery has sort of set me back. I had somebody come in a couple of weeks ago, and they were talking about how their knee started to bother them. It's bothered them on and off for a few years, and now it got to a point where it's starting to kind of swell quite a bit out of nowhere, and they'd been to see their physician, and you know, they were a little bit down about it, and they were someone that used to really enjoy running. Through conversation, they had made the decision that, look, the reason that I run is because my health is important to me, and I like all the positive benefits of exercise that I see, you know, bleed out into other elements of my life. And so they were able to put running on on their own, put running on the back shelf, either permanently or at least for a while, and take up swimming and cycling. And they were able to self-monitor how that knee responded to those activities, and they seemed to be responding well. And so that's what they're doing. They're, instead of running, they're cycling and they're swimming. And they're still having all of the positive benefits of working out without, at this time, the knee getting to a place where it is problematic for them. I think this is a really great example of self-planning, self-pacing, and self-modification that people will often do on their own, or can be done through, you know, the assistance of an experienced therapist that's able to really work with somebody and tailor their recovery process to their needs. I think one other thing that I like to do where possible, where there's not a sense of urgency or a true sense of urgency attached to recovery, is I always like to wait that little bit extra time if possible. If someone's in a good place, so let's say they've returned to full play, but they haven't returned to sport performance, can we spend an extra week there, 2 weeks, 3 weeks? The reason is that sometimes when people are so close, or they've got that little niggle of a symptom, you know, I barely feel it, I like to spend a little bit more time, if I can, with the person in that end stage of rehab, mostly because I just really don't want things to go sideways for them, because if it does happen, then it is seemingly just more disastrous and difficult for the person to deal with because they were so close. And so wherever possible, I just like to, it doesn't mean that the person is being managed, say, delicately. I think that sometimes it's just, maybe it's my philosophy as a therapist to have that little bit extra peace of mind to say, look, you're doing really well here. Hockey tryouts don't start for another 4 weeks. We're going to keep you at this stage for another 10 days or so before we get you into that full scrimmage. We're going to work you, you know, really hard in these practices and drills. But before we return you to kind of contact play, I want just 10 more days of that. And maybe you increase like the frequency of workouts in that time to really, really push. I think that philosophically, that has always been something that makes me as a therapist feel comfortable. But in saying that and kind of rounding this episode out, we also have to understand that with all of these things, people, you know, if people can be really mindful of all of the things that we've talked about, and there will be times where people either get re-injured or struggle or don't recover at all. And these are really more difficult circumstances. Sometimes discussions around like removal from a sport or a job or a change in sport or change in job permanently or permanent modifications of some type of activity or sport have to be discussed. And sometimes that can be really difficult, but sometimes it can be exciting. It can lead to new possibilities. Ultimately, the goal is to try to maintain some close degree of normalcy as possible. And people, generally speaking, aren't super excited about change, some people more so than others. But having some openness and some creativity can be a means for some exploration. You know, I've always wanted to try this sport, and it seems to be a little bit more kind to my knee. So maybe I'm going to lean into that. And you might find that that is an activity or a sport that you really enjoy, or maybe you're able to do the same sport, but it's less intense. So again, the example of the hockey player, maybe they have to drop down a league or play less throughout the course of the week to modify. I think the normalcy piece is important because there have been circumstances where people get injured. You know, they're playing a sport that they really love. Let's say it's soccer. Then they stop playing, and soccer is the only sport they've really played and enjoyed their entire life. And then they, you know, leave behind some behaviors that were positive for them that allowed them to be a better soccer player. So maybe they were training in the gym 2 or 3 times a week to improve their soccer game. Maybe now that they're not playing soccer, they've removed all of that activity. So trying to have conversations with people as early as possible in these circumstances to continue to try to do things that are meaningful and enjoyable, and not leaving everything behind and looking at things through an inquisitive lens, which I know is substantially easier said than done in certain circumstances, can be helpful and valuable. And I think that ultimately, as a therapist that sort of sees my job as trying to achieve that for people, that's what's really truly important to me at the end of the day, is not only trying to prevent recurrent injury or re-injury or something from moving into a chronic stage, but understanding the sort of bigger reason why we try to do that, which is to help people, you know, fulfill, say, an active life or fulfill a job that they love, or, you know, help people move forward in whatever positive way they can. I think ultimately, as healthcare providers, that's one of the reasons why we get into, or I'll speak for myself, a lot of what I do is tailored around. So I think that kind of wraps up today's episode. The update on my back seems to be good. I recognized that, you know, there were a few things that I could have done a little bit more positive for myself in days leading up to the injury. I also understand that my warm-up in exercise and prior to exercise has not been great, so I've adopted that. I reduced some of the load that I lift in the week along with intensity, and taking a little bit longer to progress than I would have, say, 10 years ago. And things seem to be moving in the right direction now, which is great. And I'm still able to, you know, continue training with kettlebells, which is a really enjoyable thing for me. My question for you this week is, have you dealt with a stubborn case of re-injury? If so, what has been helpful for you, either as someone that's going through it or someone that is working in the therapy space and has continued to help people along the way? Love to know in the comments below. As always, folks, I hope that you found this episode to be of value to you. Have yourselves a great weekend, and we will see you in the next one.